Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Understands a poem, he shall have troubles. If a man lives with a poem, he shall die lonely. If a man lives with two poems, he shall be unfaithful to one. If a man conceives of a poem, he shall have one less child. If a man conceives of two poems, he shall have two children less. If a man wears a crown on his head as he writes, he shall be found out. If a man wears no crown on his head as he writes, he shall deceive no one but himself. If a man gets angry at a poem, he shall be scorned by men. If a man continues to be angry at a poem, he shall be scorned by women. If a man publicly denounces poetry, his shoes will fill with urine. If a man gives up poetry for power, he shall have lots of power. If a man brags about his poems, he shall be loved by fools. If a man brags about his poems and is loved by fools, he shall write no more. If a man craves attention because of his poems, he shall be like a jackass in the moonlight. If a man writes a poem and praises the poem of a fellow, he shall have a beautiful mistress. If a man writes a poem and praises the poem of a fellow overly, he shall drive his mistress away. If a man claims the poem of another, his heart shall double in size. If a man lets his poems go naked, he shall fear death. If a man fears death, he shall be saved by his poems. If a man does not fear death, he may or may not be saved by his poems. If a man finishes a poem, he shall bathe in the blank wake of his passion and be kissed by white paper. Good evening, everyone. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to Quintessential Listening Poetry. That was a piece by Mark Strand, written in 1970. The poem is entitled The New Poetry Handbook. Quintessential Listening Poetry is a different kind of call-in show. It's a show where we invite people to come on and talk about topical issues, to talk about things that are important to them in terms of their daily lives. Our special guest tonight is Lewis Furman. He's an incredible young poet, one whose talent is unbelievable, and what I'd like to do is to bring him on right now. Lewis, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. It's great to have you on, Lewis. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I am a father of three kids, husband to a wife of 14 years. I've grown up here in Montgomery County, Maryland. I've been here most of my life. What else? I write occasionally. I write poetry. That's me in a nutshell,
right.
I guess.
I heard you some years ago at the Guerrilla Poetry Insurgency event, and I was mesmerized by your talent. As I said earlier, I really like your new, unique style. The fact that you memorize your work to me is incredible. And what I'd like to do at this point is to turn it over to you to share with us a piece of your fantastic work. This is Lewis Furman.
Okay, sure. I will share a piece I wrote about 7 years ago now, called The Ladder. My aim was not to be a leader. I just want to be someone that helps people see that we don't need a one, but that we need an all, meaning we need to all believe that we can all be free or weak and fall. Now who will heed the call? We need the strong, more of soul than arm, to be soldiers armed with only solar armor and a sober calm, to build a solar army. Now behold the dawn, because we're bringing the light, bringing the warmth, we'll breathe the breath of life until we be a corpse, and then we'll be a force of energy just coursing through the streams of the veins of our seed. Now proceed not in vain in achieving the dreams for which you aim. Keep more than self on the brain when you attain. Indeed, this day of rage has been arranged. We've arrived at sight in the lack of any change, and now we occupy the minds preoccupied with occupying our minds. Our time is nigh, and we have taken the streets. LA to DC, belated indeed. Nevertheless, we're finally facing the beast, getting hazed and tasered at the hands of brazen police, pepper spraying our faces for our display of beliefs. And while they're reaching for their pieces, we're just saying our piece. We got a lot on our minds, just trying to give them a piece, trying to bring the destruction of this seductive corruption, replacing war with discussion, replacing lies with some constructive education, so that we can build a nation united under the notion that you and I are the same despite our differences, like skin pigment or religion, for instance. Because when we're pricked with syringes, all of us drip the same liquid. We all need air to breathe and water to drink, like we need love to live and open minds to think, open eyes to see, open ears to listen, and open hearts to embrace those who feel what they need is missing. No need to pay me attention, but please heed what I'm saying, because my persona is irrelevant when there's demons need slaying. Some say Martin was a womanizer and Malcolm was gay, and granted these here allegations could just be mere speculation, engineered to smear reputations and further steer separation. But peers, what this take away from what this pair did for our nation, if it was true? Fact is that we're human and things happen. Perfection is lacking, so infractions were only natural. We need to learn from them and look past them, not let them subtract from our people's positive action when there's passion that's attached to them. And true indeed, you and me are seeing true and seizing truth. You see, our troops are overseas, overseasoned, overseen by overseers who just see them as some pawns, using fear on us to draw more to come and join their cause. More to come, but I'ma pause or digress so you can digest what I just said. I just fed you some vitamins for your head, and they might have been hard to swallow. So I invite you all to follow your hearts, because that's the start of inciting the right tomorrow. Now listen, I implore you, tune me out if I bore you. If you are not enjoying the music I'm making for you, the styles that I employ are the topics that I explore. You can feel free to avoid them, tune me out and ignore them. Your opinion is yours, and I respect that. And I expect that you never will neglect that, because if you neglect that, you might as well eject that. Bet that and check it. We don't need any more setbacks, so just set back and marinate a while. Think about the things in life that really make you smile, the things that touch you deep inside the center of your soul. Then set that as your goal to spread those feelings where you go. See, I see it as mine. We live in dim times, but living in them shouldn't limit us to little shine. When the limits in our minds, we don't even know its limits. That's unlimited potential. So when life throws you some lemons, you take them, make some meringue pie, or maybe lemonade. Make sour situations sweet. Now let me demonstrate. See, I was raised without a solid father figure, so I figured that I'd be a solid father. Now I got a shining son, and he's my namesake. My little lady's my look-alike. If I'm looking like I like to live, well, my looks don't lie, because I'm loving life. I got a loving wife. We're raising these kids together. We've weathered some storms for the better. Now this endeavor's forever, and our serotonin's high, even though the dough is low. And since those are golden standard men, I'll go for broke and say that we're all comatose if we can't see that love's the only thing we need to keep this boat afloat and keep from slipping down the slope that we've been sliding on. Riding on this feeling that we're near and clearer minds, and look, the vibe is strong. So you can ride us off or you can ride along, but we'd be glad to have you choose the latter as we climb along.
Wow.
That's it.
That was incredible. And folks, if you don't know, that was memory. It's not written down. That's just pure memory, memorization. Tell us about that process of memorizing your work.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. A lot of people that know me probably don't know, in my early 20s, I actually sold life insurance, and I would drive around a lot. And so in this driving, I just kind of started like trying to freestyle. And then instead of actually like freestyling, which is just like, you know, just putting down flow off the top of the head, I started kind of just like coming up with a line, memorizing it, adding another line, going back to the beginning of, you know, the first line, going, and then just adding on and repeating, adding on, repeating, adding on. and repeating. So it's just like repetition, 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 until eventually, you know, I had a whole piece. And the process usually took no less, usually takes no less than a month, and taken a month, yeah. Just because, you know, it's not like I don't have a lot of time. I haven't had a lot of time in a long time. But so it's the time I do have is when I'm like driving or walking or something like that. And so that's when I work on my stuff.
Now, you stated in your biographical sketch that you started writing in your 20s.
I started writing this in my 20s. Yeah, I started writing, I initially wanted to be a rapper back in like my early 20s, be a hip hop artist. And then, you know, just kind of veered away from that and just wanted to focus on, you know, creating the art, not necessarily becoming a professional artist, just creating the art.
Would you view your work as being spoken word or a different form of poetry?
I struggle still to label, like, I don't know how to categorize it per se. I mean, it's like I'm rapping, right? So, you know, but it's, some people consider it spoken word. You know, so I don't know how I call it. I tell people like I rap poetry, I guess.
You rap. Okay. Well, I view you as being a wordsmith.
I appreciate that.
Yes, it's true. You're able to maneuver words in a way that makes sense. That makes sense. So I think your talent is fantastic. What we're going to do is take a little break here. We'll be right back.
All right.
Back. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with the special guest, Lewis Thurman. Lewis, let me ask you a question. If it takes you a month to create a piece, I mean, are you only focused on that one piece at a time, or are you already focused on another one, too? Is it just one at a time that you're working on, or you've got two, three, or four in your head at the same time?
So, well, the first thing is month is minimum. I have songs that I have taken like I have one song I'll do later called The Labyrinth. That was the first, that song took me a year to finish. And then I have another song that I may or may not do. It involves like a little sung chorus and stuff. I don't know how well that will sound all over the phone, but that one took me. That one, I started it a year and a half before I finished it, but I didn't work on it consistently through. I kind of took breaks from it. Sometimes, to answer the other part of your question, sometimes I'll start one and then have an idea for something else and start that idea, but more often than not, I'm usually just working on one until I'm finished with it. Yeah.
But what I'd like you to do now is to favor us again with another piece of poetry.
All right. Sure. I actually decided that I'm going to go kind of in chronological order with some of these from my older ones up to my newer ones. So maybe people can get an idea of the way my sound may or may not have evolved. So this one's called People, and I think I wrote this in like later 2012. This one goes out to all of my people. Wait, I'm mixed. Hold on, I need to be more specific. Don't I let it be known that this is for those awake or still in a coma, from Kuwait to Arizona, Afghanistan to Maryland, from Niger to China. If you're albino or the blackest African that you can't see, if you meditate by the Ganges or if you're up in the Andes chewing coca so you can breathe, this one's for you. My name is Lewis and I'm truest when I'm doing what I love to do and moving through my music. Checking my race is human and knows the concept of race in humans. Race, man, put race in place to subject. Gave some people in some places just to throw them on some slave ships. Basically, race is baseless, unscientific, and face is still a means of separation. We're perpetuating in this day and age, and it's amazing, ain't it, how our brains are stained and tainted after all this integration. Still in need of reparations all around the world, and really we need better education, because what has unfurled in our history, blistering miseries, itching at us like some histamines, and here's the thing, to many, it's still a mystery. That's why I'm sharing all I know and learning all I don't, and striving to understand all that I can so that I don't fall victim to the ignorance, the spawn of which is hatred, the overlord of prejudice and violence, which make bedfellows of the most destructive kind, breeding destructive minds, leading to destructive times, and the climax is nearing. So many people fearing because nobody knows each other. Can't tell that I'm your brother because you're blinded by my color, or the almighty dollar, or maybe because I don't follow the religion that you follow, or because I don't have a problem with two men loving each other. Who am I to tell a woman she can't have a woman love her? Who are we to tell anyone they can't be with who they can't be with who they love, man. It's 2000 and something. Let people be who they want. Now, I'm not saying not to judge, because, see, I don't see that as logical. Even now, we're judging to see if what I'm saying seems plausible, and it's probable that you'll put that judgment towards one of my character, which is fair, because, see, the point is to point out the disparity between judging for clarity and better understanding of a person and judging to stigmatize in the hopes their image worsens. The former's for building. The latter's a tool of destruction. How can we be a people if our people are deconstructed on the regular? Seems we've got ourselves by the judge. We're some stone-throwing sinners, man. It's got to be bugging you. I know it's irking me, so let's see some urgency. Everybody wants change, but few are moving with purpose. See, this right here is an emergency. It's people are dying. Children are starving. The whole world is crying. So stop vying straight for that eye up on the top of the pyramid. The people are at the bottom. Change, man. I know I am my people. That's
wow.
All.
I mean... To me, the word wow is the word of the day, because, again, that was really, really, really powerful. Now, with that particular piece, do you have a favorite line that you share? Is there one section that just stands out for you as being what epitomizes your work?
You know, so first I'll say it's hard for me to locate that because in the way I've trained my brain to know my pieces, I have to like start from the beginning to get somewhere in the middle. I can't just like think of a starting place in the middle. You know what I mean? But if I was to, you know, I think I've noticed that I get a different sort of energy sometimes when I'm saying different parts of the poem. And so I'm going to like venture to say the last third of it, of that one I just did, I like a lot, I think.
Okay.
I mean, the whole thing's cool.
Thing is great. I know that you're an activist, and I was wondering, as you had an opportunity to share, there are really a number of different issues that people face just in terms of their daily lives, issues around racism, sexual orientation, sexism. So I was just wondering, as an activist, what caused you to want to write in the fashion that you fashion?
Sorry, what caused me to want to write in what fashion?
In the fashion that you write in.
Oh,
I mean, in terms of discussing topical issues.
You know, I just, so I guess how it started was like, I love music, but I love hip hop a lot. And, you know, I think maybe around when I was around 20 or so, like my ear for hip hop started moving towards stuff that was just like kind of more of a mainstream pop hip hop sound to stuff that's a little more lyrical. And I just started realizing how powerful the medium has is one way or the other, for, you know, for good or otherwise, it's powerful. And then it's potential, it's positive potential is what really started resonating with me. And at around the same time, I just kind of, I had never really been like very socially, politically aware or anything like that. And then there, you know, that series of events that kind of sparked that around the time I was like 21 or so. And so this all started happening at the same time. And so then I started writing based on like my view of the world, I think. And just with a pretty heavy belief that, you know, people, you know, these are just messages that need to get out there. And, you know, and that's, so that's what I was trying to do. That's what I try to do, I guess.
Where do you go to recite? Where do you share your work?
Where? Well, I try to get to open mics. My schedule's a little busy, but the first place I ever went was the where we met, the GPI, Guerrilla Poetry Insurgency open mic down at BOSA in Adams Morgan. And the GPI family welcomed me with open arms, with a whole lot of love. You know, and so I went there pretty much monthly for probably 2 years, I guess, almost. And then it just, you know, it just started getting kind of, my schedule did not allow me to go so as frequently, so I went less and less frequently. And then I started trying out other open mics that I would hear about. Spit That is apparently the longest running open mic in DC. That's down by Howard. That, you know, it's such a low key place. And like literally it's in like a row house, and you go upstairs and there's probably 60 chairs set out in just this big empty room. And then there's, you know, people just go up in front of the chairs and do their stuff. And it's always, every time I've been, it's standing room only and just nonstop, just amazing, like influential, inspiring talent. I've done like Busboys and Poets. GPI used to do outdoor open mics. We've done DuPont Circle. It's been a while. Hopefully we can do that again starting up this year. But so, you know, when I have time, I get out and do it. I'm trying to work up the nerve to go and just kind of find a friend to play the bass or drums or something and set up outside of a metro station somewhere in the city and start doing that every now and then. But
well, let me ask this question. What is it like to stand in front of the audience? How do you feel?
6 years now I've been doing it. I still feel nervous every single time.
Right.
It's weird. Right. You'd think. I mean, I think I'm definitely less nervous than I used to be. But you know, it just seems like something that you would kind of get used to. But I have not completely gotten used to it yet. But that being said, I enjoy sharing it. What I probably like the most about it is the positive feedback. You know, some people like hold on to lines that they hear and they come up to me afterwards and they're like, yo, that line you said, or this series of lines, it went like, they like memorize it already. I'm like, wow. And they're like, you know, that really, I needed to hear that right now, or that really resonated with me. Like, you know, stuff like that. That's kind of like, that means a lot to me that it had some type of positive impact on somebody else. It means like the most to me, actually.
I can understand. Again, as I stated, your work really struck me just in terms of the lyricism as well as the power. Well, let's take a little break and we'll be right back. This is Listening Quintessential Listening Poetry. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Lewis Furman, and we're going to continue this journey together. We'll be right back. Michael Anthony Ingram, welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. The call-in number is 646-787-1631. Please call in. We've got a fantastic guest here tonight. And, Lewis, I'm going to give you a little break, and I'm going to recite a piece of poetry just to give you a couple of seconds to breathe before we go to your next piece, if that's okay.
Sounds good. Yeah, of course.
All right. All right. This is Pablo Neruda. And the piece of poetry is titled, If You Forget Me. I want you to know one thing. You know how this is. If I look at the crystal moon, at the red branch of the slow autumn of my window, if I touch near the fire the impalpable ash or the wrinkled body of the log, everything carries me to you. As if everything that exists, aromas, light, metals, were little boats that sail toward those isles of yours that wait for me. Well now, if little by little you stop loving me, I shall stop loving you little by little. If you suddenly forget me, do not look for me, for I shall already have forgotten you. If you think it's long and mad, the winds of banners that passes through my life, and you decide to leave me at the shore, at the heart where I have roots, remember that on that day, at that hour, I shall lift my arms and my roots will set off to seek another land. But if each day, each hour, you feel that you are destined for me with implacable sweetness, if each day a flower climbs up to your lips to seek me, all my love, all my own, in me all that fire is repeated, in me nothing is extinguished or forgotten. My love feeds on your love, beloved. And as long as you live it, it will be in your arms without leaving mine. That was Pablo Neruda.
Nice.
We have a number of callers. The callers from what looks like Florida, as well as Los Angeles. And there's another caller from Maryland. I'd like to tune this person in, if it's okay, Lewis.
Sure.
All right. Good evening, caller. Your area code is 301, and the first three digits are 787. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Lewis.
Hello.
This is Brenda. Enjoying hearing you on the air, and just want to know what your poetry does for you. I remember a couple of years ago, you would post videos of the process while you were driving. And that was really brave of you to share that process. But what does your poetry do for you, and what you want it to do for the listeners, and how you develop the cadence that you have in reading your poems?
Wow. Well, first of all, I would like to say I just smiled when you introduced yourself, Brenda. I'm very honored that you're calling in right now. It's good to hear your voice. So let's see. I think you asked like three questions. I'm going to try and remember them all. What does my poetry do for me? It allows me to reflect. I really, you know, strive to make sure everything I'm saying is accurate, and that it makes sense. I don't like putting filler lines in. I like every line to have meaning and make sense. And if I come across something that I think sounds funny, or if I don't believe is 100% genuine, or if, you know, like, or if I feel like, hey, like I need to fact check myself, like go online and fact check myself, I do that. So, you know, it gives me an outlet in one sense, and it helps me reflect in another, if that makes any sense. And then, was the next part of the question, what do I think it does for other people?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope it's inspiring in one way or another. I hope that it's, you know, enlightening in one way or another, in some form or fashion, in a positive way. That's what I hope it does. I know people have told me that, you know, they enjoy it, and those things are true. So I'm not sure what else. And as far as the cadence,
it really makes you think. I'll put that in there. It really makes you think. So I think that's extremely important. You've got to really reach deep to understand.
Thanks, Michael. Actually, yeah, that is one thing that is really important to me. I like to try and facilitate, you know, deeper thinking, or, you know, thinking on whatever level. So thanks. That's a good point.
Okay.
And then as far as the cadence bit, it goes to my love of hip hop, and specifically, you know, rappers that can say something while kind of hooking you with their rhythm and wordplay. You know, it's like a percussion instrument in a way, you know what I mean? When you're trying to get the rhythm the right way, and just the rhyming schemes, it's a lot of that part of it is like a lot of fun for me. When I am, you know, writing what I'm writing to get stuff out with cool writing scheme, rhyming schemes and cadences, I just really enjoy that part a lot.
Thank you.
I hope that answered your questions. Yeah, thank you, Brenda. It's good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear yours, Lewis. Love you.
Love you too. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, Lewis, would you favor us again with another piece?
Sure. All right. This one I haven't done in a little while, so I hope I can get through the whole thing. But this one is called Chains, and I think I wrote this probably about 2013 or so. Word to my gradually receding hairline, man, I'm not getting any younger over here, but I'm learning to embrace my age while these grades climb for airtime. I've got a wife and kids now, this is their time. Time to let go my ego. Though I'm letting my locks grow, I'm trying to spend less time in the mirror and more time reflecting. It's obvious the world needs change, but there's chains around my neck that I've been wearing since 3 trimesters after conception, and I ain't trying to rock them, I'm trying to drop them. I'm working on picking the locks off them so I can forever toss them out the window of my mind frame and further develop a strategy for this mind game that we call life. I look around and see this green encryption falling down. It surrounds us, its purpose to confound us, bound us. Clarity's a rarity, but lessons are profound when you can decipher the symbols that abound, which are relative to you, like kin, and they like in the way they grow on you, and like in the hyphens, the way that they connect you to a deeper purpose and help you search and see what's lurking deep beneath the surface of the superficial age that we're living in, where we raise our little kids as if they're innocent. Is limitless. We normalize sexual images, and then we ask how some kids are promiscuous the minute their pubescence hits. We glorify the aesthetic, objectifying each other as if we're items to be possessed, and then we turn around and wonder how children are sold for sex, living by double standards, hypocrisies unaddressed. Yes, see, therein lies a deeper problem. If you don't recognize a problem, what is there to solve? And if you don't reckon you're a part of Babylon just because you see it's fallen, well, then I guess you're absolved, huh? chained down by that ego, says I. As am I, and my excuse is I'm just trying to get by. And I ain't proud of that complacency, it eats me inside. And though it eats me alive, somehow I still let it ride. I outwardly justify it with my three kids and my wife. Truth is, I grew up compliant, been that way most of my life. And now my soul grows defiant of that compliance. And I find myself with this burning desire to start a riot. And in my mind, I'm getting all riled up. Posting on Facebook, like, look at how they defile us. Snap back to reality, and I tend to stay quiet, man. Visited, occupied, but stood by and stay silent as the people's mic drowned out the sound of the sirens. Watch cops line up smiling, probably itching for violence. Meanwhile, I watch the occupiers wishing that I was them, wishing that I was David standing up to Goliath, just wishing. Putting no means towards that end, though. Introvert in my safe zone, looking out through the window on this rising tide of change, but afraid to dip in my big toe. Never mind jumping all the way in and swimming. You dig it, exhibiting inhibitions which inhibit my intermissions. Intermissions from peace are what hinder my inner vision. And when my third eye is blinded, impotence in decision making, exacerbating my self-inflicted imprisonment. I'm a slave on my own accord. Are you listening? I no longer blame the system for the chains that I'm twisted in. I've maintained their existence, so they remain my affliction until the day that something different within me is risen. Emancipation is not something gifted through legal diction, but a realization manifested that freedom intrinsic in the simple fact that we're living. I'm saying freedoms are given, only rescinded by the chains to which we give definition. That's it.
Wow. Thank you. I just received a text message from Maria in Tennessee. She'd like to know, who do you view yourself as being now? Who are you now as a result of writing your poetry?
Who am I now as a result of writing my poetry?
Yes. I'm
sorry. I didn't hear that last part you just said. Can you repeat that?
I said I interpret that as meaning, again, just who are you? You know, now that you've taken
I'm not exactly sure how to answer the question, but I'll try. As a result of my poetry, I guess it's just helped me be...
How have you changed?
Yeah, sure. I think it's helped me be I really strive to be open-minded. Yeah, I think it helps me, like I was saying before, it helps me reflect, and so it helps me, you know, strive towards kind of just more thorough, deeper thinking, being more conscientious. And I think that's, you know, it's pretty important. I'm not saying like I'm anybody's anywhere close to the deepest thinker anybody's going to think, but for me, based off of what, you know, where I used to be, it has helped develop me a lot in that sense, I guess, if that makes sense. So,
I'd also like to know whether you have a CD.
No, not yet. It was a goal of mine for last year to put out an acapella album. I did not achieve that goal, so I am going to give it another shot this year, hopefully soon. Stay tuned.
Okay. All right, Maria, stay tuned, because I'd love to
hear. But wait, actually, I could say that I don't have a CD, but some of my pieces are recorded on YouTube. I don't know if we can just like share that in the comments under the thing, or it's like youtube.com/evolutionary, which is EVOLOUTIONARY.
And we'll share them in the comments as well.
Right.
Yeah. Let's take a little break and we'll be right back with Lewis Furman. Mike. We are back. This is Michael Anthony Ingram with Quintessential Listening Poetry with our special guest, Lewis Furman. What I'd like to do, Lewis, is to recite a piece now, to give you a break. The title of the piece is Black Alice in Neverland. Right. Black Alice is never perfect. Although she had perfect thoughts growing up in small-town North Carolina, thoughts of her mama's sweet potato pie and hot watered cornbread on the kitchen stove, thoughts of what the world would look like when she reached the perfect age. Now, she's reached the perfect age. Where did her perfect thoughts go? Black Alice's life was never perfect either. Although she would proudly tell you, or tell any listener, she grieved that it was. She'd share heartfelt stories about her perfect children and her perfect husband who worked the perfect job. Never a day of complaint she'd proudly share with those who would listen. Those who knew her well shook their heads, chuckled in disbelief, and watched how that perfect lie would grow on her perfect tongue, like a pair of old shoes forgotten on the front porch during a hard southern rain. Black Alice never sang in the choir, although she was often heard singing softly in the back of the church, singing in perfect pitch and swaying proudly in an imaginary perfect long white robe, trim with gold, sacred hymnal in hand, reading musical notes she did not perfectly understand. The glory of her uplifted voice made up for this fall indiscretion. Yet in her mind, thoughts of perfection are what saved her each night her perfect husband walked in, mad and swinging at the world, fists flying like fury, striking her face like lightning. Soon, the storm would pass. A quick, "I love you, baby. You know I do," her perfect husband would softly whisper in her ear as he'd nibble on her neck and plant a wet kiss on her raw, bruised, yet no longer perfect cheek. Black Alice sang on in Neverland. Black Alice in Neverland.
Good stuff. Was that one of yours?
Yes, that was mine, yes.
Man,
that was one of mine.
Love
I've got a collection coming out hopefully sometime soon. It's called When Cherry Blossoms Fall on Black Skin.
I'm excited for it. Can't wait.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Are you ready to share another piece with us?
Sure. This next one I'll do, also written around 2013, I think. It's called Melange. All right. Check out this verbal collage as it massages your nerves with this barrage of words. Not a mirage, more of a lyrical hodge of sorts. I went inside your thoughts that you might find my heart and maybe even feel my soul. See, I love you. I said it and I meant it. And it goes for those of you I know and those I haven't met yet. Even those who harbor hatred. We've all got demons we haven't dealt with. But the more we feed them, the more they'll bleed us. For every drop of negativity, we could leak like Assange. And what we seek, our children soak up. Sorry, what we seep, our children soak up like a sponge. And what sponge can properly clean with dirty water? Might make a surface gleam, but disease will still be fostered and fester. And yes, sir, the cycles will continue. Sicknesses will move on to perform at other venues unless you invest in some meds and ingest them. Love is the weapon that stems those infections, so live by that remedy. Peace be a supplement. Understanding's a vital vitamin for development, and all that is basically wasted if haste is displayed in the place of a great state of patience. So slow down, take a look around. You'll find life abounds from the sky to the ground. There's a balance, a cyclical system with simple principles. Take only what you need. You don't eat it, you let it be, but we're the only beings that take everything that we see. We'll find it, create a need, and then bleed it till it's depleted. But peep, this little theory I've got. The world is heating up, and what do our bodies do to fight a virus off? They build a fever. See where I'm taking this? If not, sit back, blaze a spliff. Watch the Matrix and listen as Agent Smith explains a bit in the part that he's probing Morpheus's mind to find the codes relied on to achieve the freedom that we all seek in the road to Zion. Shout out to Nas and Junior Gong until the fall of Babylon. And as I babble on, I hope to keep your gears turning. And if you've got that short attention span, I get it, man. Why do you think I can't stay on one subject in my spiels? Learning is my addiction. Fear is the great affliction, a.k.a. the mind killer. Word to the witches of Dune fame, Blu-ray, clear through my mind's eye. I got all these lies that surround us in my sights. Look at our lives. It's like I'm watching sci-fi drones in the sky high, spying as they fly by. Infrared cams disrespecting house walls. Patriot acting big brother making house calls. And on the topic of surveillance, show of hands, how many have a Facebook? And if you don't already get that correlation, maybe this elaboration will help put it into place. Look, you're posting photos of yourselves taken from all angles. Then you're checking into all the places where you hang out. Friends list shows your associates and kin. And that's only the beginning of the information given. Next, you're given not your name, hometown, and your religion, your place of employment, your position, your current location, when and where you got your education, your age, your birthday, and even your relationship status. And then got your status update, where you state how you had a rough day or whatever's on your mind. You just type it in that line, and then everybody knows how you're feeling all the time. Oh my, it's quite a profile, ain't it? I hope you get the picture that I'm painting. Just trying to point out the blatant illuminated like Satan. Since humans play God, I got a food I'd like to recommend you take a taste of. And it's only forbidden if you're following their rules, but we've all been chiseled by their tools. Putty in their hands, they've been molding our views since youth. Through schools, growing up, through the news, the lies and half-truths they be telling us are shadier than Dagobah. But wisdom you will find if you make it through the grime, yo. Duh, I mean, to me it's pretty obvious. Don't mean to be demeaning to anyone in the audience who isn't seeing things how I see them. Cause what is knowledge but believing in the way that you perceive and put together life's puzzle pieces? It's just a subtle thesis, trying to get your brain to move. This is verbal telekinesis, or at least it's my attempt at it. It's just for enlightenment, man. I'm a zen addict aiming for that nerve on the ones that are comfortably numb, the ignorant, the silent, the comfortably dumb. And I'm my biggest target, because frequently I just don't think enough, or I just don't speak up in difficult situations. But then I rebuff, because in a time of inaction, something is a must. So I let my soul speak through my songs, hoping that these quantums of solace will help form a bond, so that when the sky falls and the fecal hits the fan, I'm just saying that people need to be ready, because heavy will the burdens be that are gonna need bearing. But the more we have to share them, the easier they'll be to carry. So until the day I'm buried and ferried across the river Styx, I'm gonna stick to lifting and sharing my thoughts. And this was the melange. That's it.
You're amazing. You're amazing. We'll be right back. Forgotten Soul woke up early this morning, wired. He'd not slept well the night before. The constant rain had pummeled his window, kept him from sleeping, and kept him from stealing away home. As he laid there, he recollected what Muhammad Ali said in the mid-1970s, "I am America. The part you won't recognize, but get used to me. Black, confident, cocky, my name, not yours. My goals, my own, get used to me." The greatest 1975. A forgotten soul woke up early this morning, mired. His existence, like the torrential downpour, had engulfed him, overwhelmed him, and enslaved him in his stifling embrace. As he lay there, he recalled what W.B. Du Bois wrote in the early 1900s. "It's a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity." And also what Elvis Cleaver wrote in the 1960s, "All the gods are dead except the god of war." A forgotten soul woke up early this morning, tired, His body ached, no relief from the inner torrent. The deluge offered no refuge, and he lay there in the midst of his own drenching and wept, all the while thinking back to what Ralph Ellison had written in his book, The Invisible Man. I am an invisible man. No, I am not a spook like those who haunted Edgar Allan Poe. Nor am I one of your Hollywood movie ectoplasms. I'm a man of substance, of flesh and bone, fiber and liquids, and I might even be said to possess a mind. I am invisible, understand, simply because people refuse to see me. A forgotten soul woke up early this morning, hired. He had found a new job, a job that beckoned him with minimum wage promises and thoughts of a new beginning, thoughts designed to come back what had become an increasingly familiar ending, fired. He reflected on what Zora Neale Hurston stated. She said, "Sometimes I feel discriminated against, but it does not make me angry. It merely astonishes me. How can anyone deny themselves the pleasure of my company is beyond me." A forgotten soul woke up early this morning and begged for the night before, all the while evoking memories of the double episode of Good Times in 1974 when Jane suddenly died and Florida didn't cry until she was cleaning up the apartment after the funeral. As she carried a punch bowl to the sink, she suddenly stopped and dropped it to the floor. She screamed out the immortal words, "Damn, damn, damn." All right.
Was that you? Was that yours?
That's one of mine, yes. That's called A Forgotten Soul Woke Up Early This Morning.
I don't think I've heard that one, man. I like that a lot. That was great.
And I thought about you, too, when I did the line about W.B. Du Bois that came from his book, Soul for Black Folks.
Yeah, I recognize it. I think, we must have been talking about it. I just finished that. I have to go back and read it again because I don't think I've ever I'm not a big note taker when I read books historically, but I definitely wrote a bunch of gems down out of there that just really resonated
with me.
Oh, did you? Yeah, actually, one of them was the one you quoted.
Okay,
what's
it? Yeah. Well, it's funny how a book written in, 1904, 1896, which one was it? I can't remember now.
I think it was 1903.
That's what I was thinking
the entire time I was reading it, man. I was like, this is insane. We're 115 years later, and this thing is still, on point. It's an amazing tragedy is what it is. I mean,
it's a tragedy. We'll be right back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here with our very special guest, Lewis Furman. Lewis, as we close out the hour, is there one more piece that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. I will finish off with the one I mentioned earlier that took me a year, called The Labyrinth.
Okay.
All right. This one is probably my longest one, so just buckle in.
Okay.
All right. Many micros make the macro. You think the world's lost, think about why. One thing is everybody's following the cash flow, which is the silk in the web of some bold lies, and we want to stay fly. Go figure. Corny metaphor aside, I try to metamorphosize past the size of my wallet, but there's many a facade that keeps my eyes on it, and it's mighty morphin' time, but we act like Lord Zen and Rita have already been defeated, so a morph's not needed, and no need to pull together and form a Megazord, because when Zordon calls, we just press ignore.
Now, to clarify, that wasn't an allegory, but let's move it forward. Come step in my mind and take a tour. I welcome y'all to my laboratory, where I develop my oratory for you, and where my opinions born from the thoughts stored in my archives. All them grains of salt lying everywhere, that's what I take my facts with. Because what's a fact when unstoppable forces mean unmovable objects clash and trying to match wits? Now take this matchstick, flick it, and light this waxwood candle, and follow me as we navigate through this labyrinth. Pardon the madness, upbringing was taxed, and the structure I needed, I lacked. Having acknowledged that, it's now time to move past it. It's a sad fact that my dad's absence had a massive impact on me, and only added to mom's baggage as she had to raise me holding. But behold, we managed, and I'm prone to tangents. But the point is, some things in life there's no avoiding, and sometimes those things you can't avoid leave a void inside, and you gotta make a choice. Either let that void absorb and destroy you, or you don't. The concept's about as simple as pie, but the process for filling that void is symbol of pie, or similar in its complexity. That's why integrity is a necessity in this life rife with inequity and malignant entities that live to kill your empathy and manipulate your energy to guide your destiny into some places that you'd hesitate to send your enemies. Now delve into the depths with me. Look to my left, you'll see these demons walking next to me, dreaming of possessing me. They're studying my tendencies, following my steps, cause see they're fiending from my falling. It's like every other minute that I hit them with the fix, catering to their itch by visiting their abyss. No mistakes are made in my dips into their pit, and my decisions are remiss. And that's it, man, it's all me. I hear them demons knocking and I let them in. Said I hear them demons knocking and I let them in. That's right, I hear them demons knocking and I let them in. See, you can lead a horse to dirty water, but cannot force him to sin. And indeed, we're born swimming in it, but that's no justification for continuing it, because what you've identified a problem, no time for excuses. Seek to understand its roots and devise a solution. Be fluid, keep it moving, because stagnant water breeds disease with ease and leaves spiritual lesions on he who doesn't perceive that if you don't adopt the characteristics of flowing streams, you'll be inundated by toxins. Your soul will never be clean. And cleanliness is godliness, but we find it extreme, think we're pristine, so we end up being poisoned. We eat poison, we drink poison, we breathe poison. It seems poison's what we seek, so we find. Why don't we seek to be divine instead of giving in to the trappings of Babylon, trapping us in this labyrinth established within our minds. Word to the maze through which we've been traveling with this rhyme. Absurd and amazing is this haze by which we're dazed that hangs over these pastures of propaganda we graze on. Same ones we've been raised on, where we're gazed on is deranged if our aim's not to remain on it. Said we're Bernays is raison d'etre. They provide us the choices for the decisions we make. So Dumbo or donkey, that's the only debate. Jill Stein was arrested for attempting to partake. And to me, that's just another hint that the system's been fixed. And since its infancy, the symptoms persist within the citizens. Some say that's original sin, but are we born with it or into it? Is it nature or influence, or is the former the latter? Are they one and the same? Science has proven the mama's trauma alters her genes. It gets written into her DNA, passed unto her seed, along with ancestral pains that preceded. So with that said, somebody please define human nature, keeping in mind the genocide inflicted by history's major players, the earth rapers, the culture slayers, power structure shapers. Those labeled by Ishmael as takers, they're the ones that tell us to assimilate or face the incinerator. Rastafari, I call them Babylon. Christians might call them Satan if they really follow Christ. Wouldn't that be nice? Now I'm throwing stones. Hypocrisy is quite the vice. I need to self-reflect with a microscope. Self-micromanage, the little things we miss amalgamate for greater damage. Some say I'm hard on myself, I say not hard enough. We lie ourselves off a cliff, so I'm trying to call the bluffs. Cause I look around every day thinking this ain't okay. I stay in a constant state of contemplative observation. It drives me crazy. I look down at the pavement and think how that pavement's a blatant defacement of nature. And then I think about how symbolic that is, that we need to destroy life just to build our edifices. Seems even if climate change isn't anthropogenic, our existence in the present is a cancer on this planet. From Fukushima to the sixth mass extinction, to oil drilling, spilling and killing life in the seas, to deforestation, that's biogentrification. It seems our civilization is nature's abomination. But I leave it there today. Thank you for gracing me with your presence and patience. This has been a taste of what takes place in my brain on a daily basis. It's crazy, I know it drives me insane, but when faced with the tree of knowledge, I yanked me a fruit and ate it. That awakened the craving evasive of satiation, which now has become invasive. It's at the point of addiction. If ignorance is bliss, then can knowledge be an affliction or a sickness? And if it is, tell me what the prescription is, because now I'm on my cipher, eating the steak with Agent Smith, negotiating plans to plug me back into the matrix, because reality is too heavy. Sometimes I feel it's weighing me down and I can't take it. It's breaking me. Let's escape this place. I need a respite, haven anything, just a place that's safe. And I'm not the only one. How many listen and feel this way? How many of us out here feel like we're aching for greater days? I know I'm not alone, confident that that's safe to say. But if we share these problems, tell me why it's such a strain to change. Many micros make the macro, and I think the world's lost. That was The Labyrinth.
The Labyrinth. Thank you, Lewis. Yep. You're an amazing talent, and I really appreciate you being on the show tonight.
Thank you. Real quick, Michael, could I give, like, a couple quick shout-outs?
Yes.
Well, the first one, I should have done it while she was on, but Brenda is a pretty amazing person. She hosts a show called This Light. Brenda being the woman that called in earlier, This Light Sounds for Social Change, which I was honored to be on a few years ago, where she showcases like amazing artist activists from the area and outside. And she also just debuted her own documentary called Backburner Dreams. So look that up because I haven't had the opportunity to see it yet, but it's going to be amazing. She's been working on it for a long time. And she's just an amazing person. And then I mentioned Guerrilla Poetry Insurgency. I just want to shout out my good friends, Jessica, Philly, Lori, and Shahid. Shahid happens to be running for Congress in San Francisco, Shahid Buttar. So look him up and check him out. And if you know anybody in San Francisco, get them to check him out because it's somebody that would be an amazing person to have in Congress that I don't know that we've seen somebody like Shahid in Congress up to now. And then my wife, my kids, my mom, my siblings, you, Michael, I love your poetry. I was going to make a request, but I think we're out of time. The Shuck and Bean poem, I think. I love that poem. But yeah, and then just everybody else that I know that knows me, if we have come in contact with each other, you have left an imprint on me in one way or another, and just appreciate and love everybody. So thanks for giving me the opportunity, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for accepting my invitation. So good night, everyone. This is Michael Anthony Engel with Quintessential Listening Poetry. Until next time. Keep poetry in the forefront of your mind. Good night.